Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 18th day of July, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And let's start off our look at what's going on around the nation and the world today with, you could call it good news, I guess. You could certainly call it more proof of what we already knew. And yeah, you could even call it another update on the Darwin Awards. Remember the data that suggests that way over 90% of all mass murders with guns just happen to happen in gun-free killing zones? This might be another one of those indicators as to why it's not pretty close to 100%. Now, by the way, before I did this show, I did a quick search online. Gulag, of course, is always going to put the bogus stuff up front, trying to debunk the obvious and basically undeniable, especially if you have any understanding of numbers or even human nature and half a brain. Is it true that 98% of mass public shootings happen in gun-free zones? Well, look at the byline. It's from the WAPO. And no, it's not 98%. It might be 90%. Might be 86%. Yeah, folks, they're going to quibble about whether it's well over 90%, almost 100%, or whether or not you're to believe the statistics that come from those that want to ban guns without understanding how they try to rig them. They'll count suicides when that helps. They'll count shootings in self-defense if that somehow helps rig the figures. And oh yeah, they'll try really hard to spin stories like this one today. First though, the best numbers come from one of the best scientists, economists, researchers, and statisticians in the business. Professor John Lott, that President Trump cited, based on a 2014 report, which found that 98.4% of all mass shootings occurred in gun-free zones between 1950 and July 10th of 2016. Since then, and given what we've seen lately, it's hard to argue that anything has changed in that regard. In places that have more gun-free killing zones, no doubt about it, there's a whole heck of a lot more mass murders. With the possible exception of the story that I bring you today. Because every now and then, a Darwin Award winner tries to achieve their 15 minutes of fame with a mass murder, but without doing their homework. Either their FBI handler wasn't on the ball, or maybe they didn't even have one. Ooh, that's a big mistake nowadays. Or they failed to ensure that their killing field was truly gun-free. Well, that, of course, is where we start off the news today, with this story from the Greenwood Park Mall in Greenwood, Indiana, where a wannabe lone gunman mass murderer walked into a food court at the Greenwood Park Mall on Highway 31, south of Indianapolis, armed with a rifle and several magazines of ammunition, and immediately began firing. He was identified, while he lasted, as an adult male. Police have yet to release a motive, although given the idiocy running amok today, you can probably guess half a dozen. Maybe he's just yet another Antifa goon chosen for more gun bans. He was able to kill three people and injure two more during the rampage before being stopped by, guess what? Turns out it wasn't really a gun-free killing zone. A 22-year-old man, ooh, that's awfully close to the cutoff age, who was carrying a licensed lawful firearm. Police have not shared the man's name, but authorities are already calling the Good Samaritan a real hero because he was able to stop, shoot, and drop the assailant before any further bloodshed or loss of life. This according to Mayor Mark W. Myers in a Facebook post that same evening, who said, "This person saved lives tonight," and quote, "On behalf of the city of Greenwood, I am grateful for his quick action and heroism." Noting that a citizen lawfully carrying a firearm in the food court was able to stop the shooter almost as soon as it began. Why, it was even over before the SWAT team could show up, surround the scene, and do nothing for an hour or so. Now, at this point, folks, I'll pause and suggest there are any number of really interesting aspects to this story, one of which, of course, is that you're not going to hear much about it on the gun-banning, anti-constitutional, waste-stream, so-called media outlets that are more concerned with propaganda and politics than they are with the truth. And that makes it really interesting to watch and see how they're going to spin this one. For example, very, very few, with the exception of Fox News, of the major waste-stream media outlets, even mentioned that it was the Good Samaritan that took out the wannabe mass murderer before he could, make his bones. NPR, NBC, and the New York Times are typical. Four killed in Indiana mall shooting, says officials, is all the news that they're going to tell you in the headline anyway. Three people fatally shot, two injured at an Indiana mall, police say, says NPR, omitting, at least in the headline, the really important fact. Maybe some of them, like evidently the WAPO, will eventually get shamed into changing their headlines and fessing up belatedly, at least, that it was, in fact, a good guy with a gun that once again proved that it had better be a gun-free killing zone if you want to commit mass murder with impunity. They're not going to make that point, as you know darn well. They're also not going to answer a whole bunch of obvious questions that they would be salivating about if this weren't a major contraindicator to their plan to deep-six the Second Amendment and the concept of self-defense for ordinary Americans. Like what kind of handgun was the Good Samaritan packing? making when he dispatched the wannabe mass murderer. Notice that in this case, they don't even advertise the gun that the dead guy had. Huh. All the stories I've seen so far just said a long gun. Not dreaded assault weapon, not sniper rifle, not fully auto or anything else that they don't know and usually are more than inclined to make up. Not even AR-15. And only the Gateway Pundit adds this detail, a new law in Indiana allowing, who could imagine it, folks, actually allowing the Constitution to have some effect. It's called constitutional carry for handguns, and it's for the public, and it went into effect on July 1, just in time. And this, folks, is where I think the definitions and the understanding of statistics and how these things are being rigged and manipulated and twisted really, truly matters. The Greenwood Park Mall, clearly, after the Indiana legislature and governor decided, hey, let's actually allow the citizenry to keep and bear arms, what a concept, was certainly not a gun-free killing zone. But ironically, I've already seen at least one story asking, was the Good Samaritan breaking the law? Was there a sign somewhere saying no guns allowed? Now, isn't that funny, folks? There are actually idiots running around saying, if there was a sign, then we got to prosecute the good guy for saving lives. While they ignore the obvious, the wannabe mass murderers don't pay attention to the damn signs. Well, unless it comes to picking the place where they're going to do their mass executions. Because if it's got signs, it's more than likely a gun-free killing zone. But as the Darwin Award winners here are now making clear, if you really want to kill with impunity, you have to be sure there aren't some concealed carries out there somewhere. That's why it's helpful to have FBI spotters, I can't help but think. And remember this, too. Over the years, folks, I've had a number of friends who were FFLs or owned gun stores or had concealed carry permits, you name it, and almost all of them will tell you the same thing. Oh, if a concealed carry weapons licensee crosses the line, carries a gun into a building, for example, where there's a sign that says no firearms allowed, you can rest assured of one thing. They may not care about mass murders, but the ATF and a lot of other agencies with three letters in their unconstitutional names will go after those people with tongs, take away their permits, and make sure that they never make the mistake of carrying where there's a sign again. And I'll leave it to the good listener to ponder what the effects of idiocy like that might be when it comes to gun-free killing zones and more mass murders. As for your host, I'll just put it this way. If a building owner is stupid enough to put a sign up that says no firearms allowed, I have no reason to want to go in there, much less do business with people who despise the rights that better Americans than they fought and died for. Now from there, I want to spend just a couple of minutes talking about some of the so-called fact-checkers who find facts, like somebody actually dispatching a wannabe mass murderer in what turns out not to be an actual gun-free killing zone, distressing to their worldview. So they lie, cheat, twist the numbers, and twist the definitions in order to mandate their tyranny and disarm you so that you can't do anything about it. Case in point, this twisting from the WAPO that tries to make it sound a lot more complicated than it really should be. How many people constitute a mass murder? Is four enough? Over what time frame? And should we or should we not count private homes or maybe drug deals gone bad? And the answer there for the leftists is obvious. Well, it depends on whether or not they help make your case that we want you disarmed. And I'll stipulate up front, as it's probably obvious, except of course to Gavin Newsom, nutcase Nancy Pelosi, and Michael Bloomberg, that your average drug lord probably doesn't pay too much attention to the no firearms allowed sign either. But here's where it's appropriate to turn to the WAPO for the, twisting par excellence. What is a gun-free zone, they ask? And your host says, nope, wrong question. And that's why I define it more properly. A gun-free killing zone, folks. And you'll see in just a second why that's an important distinction. Says WAPO, it's not only the discrepancies between how John R. Lott Jr., the man your host refers to as probably the foremost statistical expert when it comes to gun crimes and self-defense on the planet, and Every Town for Gun Safety, that's Michael Bloomberg's disgusting organization that's all about gun bans, define mass shooting. That contributes to their differing estimates. Oh, really, do you think? There's also disagreement about how to define a gun-free zone. You see what I mean? Every Town for Gun Safety reported 16 mass shootings in gun-free zones between 2009 and 2016, while John Lott reported 24. This, they say, is clearly attributed to the difference in definitions. Every Town for Gun Safety, the ones we like, define gun-free zones as, quote, areas where civilians are prohibited from carrying firearms and there is not a regular armed law enforcement presence, unquote. Full stop. What does that mean? One rent-a-cop in a nice uniform? Maybe he gets a donut on occasion, but at least because he's got a uniform, the wannabe mass murderer can know right where he's at and when he's not where the scene of the action needs to be. And if the wannabe mass murderer has an accomplice or half a brain, take him or maybe the both of them out first. Do you see my point? John Lott, though, they say, has a much wider definition. In an email, he defined gun-free zones as, quote, places where only police or military policy are classified, places where it's illegal to carry even a permitted concealed handgun, places that are posted, and that references the sign your host has been talking about, as not allowing a permitted concealed handgun, places where general citizens are not allowed to obtain permits, or where permits are either not issued to any general citizens or to only a very tiny selective segment. In other words, think New York City or Chicago, where the only people that are allowed to have a gun permit are those that have the right connections to the city machinery. And you can probably figure something similar applies to A-list celebrities in Hollywood, too. Or at least their properly licensed muscle. And here's where the WAPO story gets funny, and kind of makes your host point, too. In layman's terms, they write, Lott's definition is so wide that even the White House, where there are snipers on the roof, would be considered a gun-free zone. Catch that, folks. Notice, at least if you still think you can trust the Secret Service, not the same as a gun-free killing zone. Lott's data set classifies the shootings that took place at Fort Hood, Texas, and the Washington Navy Yard as having occurred in gun-free zones. Well, one thing's for sure, they were gun-free killing zones now, weren't they? Every town disputed that characterization, wondering, because they're stupid, I guess, how can a place be a gun-free zone if guns are present? Good grief. Guns were present at Uvalde, at Sandy Hook, at the Pulse nightclub. Maybe they need to ask questions like, possessed by who? People that just want to kill and really don't care about the law? Well, it's certainly a gun-free killing zone if the only one there with a gun turns out to be the wannabe mass murderer, who's going to have a hell of a lot easier time now, isn't he? And here I'll go back to John Lott, who defended his assessment and definition, saying this, quote, regular military members are banned from carrying guns at military bases in the United States, making the bases surprisingly soft targets, he wrote. And by the way, folks, they didn't used to be back when we were a free country. Continued Lott, the only people who can carry guns on domestic bases are military police, so the situation is much the same as the Pulse nightclub. And here your host has to suggest that I think attorneysforgunfreedom.com on their site did a pretty good job of summarizing it, and they in turn credit the Daily Wire for much of the information. They cite the Crime Prevention Research Center, which is John Lott's organization, which says gun-free zones, areas where guns are prohibited, have been the target of more than 98% of all mass shootings. This staggering number is why such designated areas, and again, your host prefers the better term, gun-free killing zones, are also referred to as soft targets, meaning unprotected and vulnerable. And again, I will suggest by design. According to the Crime Prevention Research Center, only a little more than 1% of mass public shootings since 1950 have occurred in places that were not considered to be what they call a gun-free zone. In fact, noted the president of the organization, John R. Lott Jr., in October of 2015, only 2 mass shootings in the entire United States since 1950 have occurred in an area where the citizenry were not prohibited from carrying a gun. And let me make one more observation on this point today, folks. Given that we know what the left is up to, you can also expect these false flags to escalate. So I'll repeat some advice that good Americans have literally understood for decades, if not centuries at this point. If you don't know your rights, you don't have them. And if you're not willing to exercise them, even fight for them when necessary, you might as well not have them either. Back when we still had that quaint concept called trial by jury, there was a saying, better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Now, given the insanity that the nation has already descended into, and they intend for it to get a lot worse, folks, the modern phrasing probably goes something like, it's a lot better to have a gun and not need it than it is to not have it when you really need it. Yes, and it used to be this would go without saying, but I guess nowadays you have to say it. You better know how to use it as well. Most of my generation, and I guess this dates me, learned the 3 rules of firearm safety long before we learned how to drive a car, or even a tractor in rural Missouri. And I guess now that means we know far more about guns than every single traitorous individual who wants to ban them. And all of this leads me to one final observation on this subject, because I can't help but think, given the number of false flags, given how many times I've joked about it, but in a lot of respects, I'm not kidding, folks, whether we're talking January the 6th or what happened at Las Vegas and the cover-up that followed, you still haven't heard the truth there. or on so many of the other major, high-profile, obviously, in hindsight, false flag events that have been used to destroy the rule of law in this country, undermine the concept of freedom, liberty, and, of course, the right of individuals to keep and bear arms, among a whole lot of other things, good people do need to develop situational awareness, especially in big crowds, and especially if you're anywhere close to a major leftist cesspool city. Obviously, you should stay out of the gun-free killing zones if it's even remotely possible, and if it's not, you probably need to be somewhere else. But I do have to mention this. It's a word of caution. If you're ever at a place where you begin to see something really suspicious unfolding, like a potential mass shooting event, don't assume that it's a lone gunman, as the waste-stream media would have you believe. Look for the spotters. Look for the accomplices. Look for the handlers. Look for those who are clearing the way for the patsy. Because I guarantee you, they're looking for you. They can't afford too many more events like this one. It's waking too many people up. So on every front, they'll be working really hard to make sure that the intended gun-free killing zones really are gun-free. Over the weekend, more came out about the latest abomination called H.R. 4350, the NDAA, where the evil ones tend to put all kinds of really nasty stuff in there, hoping people won't notice. Like Chapter 89, that claims to be about countering domestic extremism, when in fact, that's exactly all that they're pushing. Inserted last week by Adam Schiffless, one of the most evil men in a very evil communist body. And how's this for smoke upon smoke? The cover is, it's about covering up for military involvement in the January 6th protest. But bad as that is, it's just the tip of the iceberg. If you ask the questions, you're a domestic extremist, and the intent here is literally to remove the U.S. military from congressional oversight. And if that sounds like a standing army, you've read the founders. Here's a story courtesy of the Federalist and John Daniel Davidson that I really think bears some examination. Especially today, in light of what I've been talking about, just a little bit over 2 weeks after the story that I'm referring to originally came out. Merrick Garland, he writes, and I'd say correctly, and his so-called Department of Just Us, that's a proper pronunciation, is in fact a threat to the Republic. Yeah, he says, it's become painfully obvious over the past year that the Just Us Department under that scumbag, I put that word in there, but it's true, Attorney General, oh man, what a disgusting way to put it, Merrick Garland, has now weaponized and politicized that department to the point that it represents an active threat to the rule of law and certainly the separation of powers. No, he says, it's not too much to say that Garland's DOJ has become a threat to the Republic. Last week, on Thursday, following that historic 6-3 U.S. Supreme Court ruling that struck down a New York law for violating, obviously, not just the Second Amendment rights of New Yorkers, but the 14th Amendment right to equal protection under the law, a DOJ spokes liar released an absolutely asinine statement saying, quote, "We respectfully disagree," what a lie, "with the ruling." In spite of the fact that the ruling itself was a, great reversal, indicating that at least a few of them there have actually read the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And, says Davidson, it's a long overdue vindication of New Yorkers' Second Amendment rights. The law, sick, that is no law, as we now know, see 16 Amateur, Section 177, folks, if you have any doubts on that, has been on the books for more than a century and made it nearly impossible, as intended, for ordinary peons in New York, serfs, slaves, call them what you want, folks, but don't call them actual Americans with a God-given constitutionally protected right, to obtain, what? A permit, a license to carry concealed. Well, right there, you don't need a license if you have a right. But in any case, the unconstitutional law forced New Yorkers to prove to a self-serving municipal bureaucrat that they needed. The asinine term is proper cause, that constitutionally protected piece of property for self-defense. In practice, this was the intent, it made it virtually impossible for law-abiding citizens in the People's Republic of New York to exercise their Second Amendment-protected constitutional right to keep and bear arms. Emphasis there on the bear, although other laws there make it virtually impossible for them even to keep them. Neither the so-called law in question nor the Supreme Court decision implicates federal gun laws at all. In other words, folks, the unconstitutionality of federal gun laws is beyond debate. All the Supreme Court was doing was say, hey, the states, too, have a problem here. That is, if you believe this 14th Amendment equal protection stuff. Oh yeah, folks, don't forget Article 4, Section 1, 2. So, writes Davidson, there's no reason whatsoever for the DOJ to even weigh in on the matter, much less express their idiotic, unlawful, anti-constitutional opinion on the ruling. Only an utterly politicized Department of Justice hoping to undermine the constitutional authority of the Supreme Court, and so the seeds of nullification, he writes, would issue such a statement. And furthermore, folks, think of it this way. Shall not be infringed means that the DOJ not only has no authority to say anything about it, they're expressly forbidden from even trying to infringe by weighing in on it with their anti-constitutional opinion. But that's not even the worst thing that Garland's DOJ did this week. In the pre-dawn hours of Wednesday morning, more than a dozen so-called federal investigators, I like the term Gestapo nowadays, raided the home of Jeffrey Clark, former Justice Department official with the Trump administration. Why? Because Clark had the temerity to investigate. Merely investigate, folks, claims of voter fraud, which turned out, as we now know, to be more than mere claims. They were truth and they were legion. Voter fraud during the 2020 election, which, of course, made Clark a target for the J6 Communist Circus Committee in the House, whose Soviet-style show trial spent a good deal of time Wednesday implying that Clark, who once oversaw 1,400 lawyers and two divisions at DOJ, is a traitor who tried to overturn the results of the election by merely suggesting that they need to be looked into. Obviously, overturning elections and making sure they stay overturned is Congress's job. You know what's funny, folks? John Daniel Davidson, while he talks about a number of other things, doesn't even mention all of them, like what they did to Dr. Peter Navarro just a while back. Anyway, back to the story. All of this should come as no surprise, since the entire raison d'etre of the J6 committee is to smear and destroy anyone who even questioned the outcome of the election or raised concerns about its unprecedented irregularities, and that's putting it mildly, by calling them a coup plotter responsible for the January 6th insurrection. In fact, though, Clark's only crime is that in a sea of attorneys who didn't want to lift a finger to investigate a rigged election, he looked for options and fought to actually uncover the truth. Of course, he's not the only one targeted by Garland's DOJ this week. More and more, folks, I really do like George Orwell's term from 1984. It's Garland's Ministry of Love. They'll love you to death. The same day Clark's house was raided, FBI agents raided the home of Michael McDonald, the top GOP official in Nevada. His crime, according to the Justice Department and the J6 Circus, was signing a document along with five other Nevada Republican Party electors after the 2020 election, signaling their support for Trump and their concerns about the rigging that so obviously went on. Among the signatories of the purely symbolic document was the state GOP Secretary James DeGraffenreid, whom FBI agents tried but failed to find on Wednesday. And all of these, says the author, are just a few of the people against whom the J6 committee has unleashed the Just Us Department of the evil Merrick Garland. So far, the committee has subpoenaed more than 100 lawmakers, local officials like McDonald and DeGraffenreid, internet and communications companies, Trump White House officials, and others. Make no mistake, he says, the committee is using the DOJ as a weapon against its political enemies. Tricky Dick would be really jealous at what they're getting away with, and Garland is allowing or even encouraging all of this to happen. And it's not like we haven't seen this building. Remember the raid on James O'Keefe's home and Project Veritas? How about the memo back in October designed to threaten and silence any parents whose only crime was to speak up about what was being done to groom their children with things like transgenderism and especially critical race BS in schools? Garland telegraphed his threat and next move by calling them domestic terrorists. And it was all a great big fabricated whopper. At every turn, Garland has shown himself hostile to the Bill of Rights. Again, he's understating the case. And to law-abiding Americans who would like to exercise those once constitutionally protected rights, while brazenly allowing political influence to direct the considerable and unconstitutional powers of the Just Us Department against the states and the people. If you think about it, folks, that's making war on them, isn't it? The weaponization of the law, or what now passes for it under the Biden regime, he suggests, has only just begun. And here's what your host needs to add now. The traitorous Congress and Senate have just added to that weaponry with a red flag stake through the Second Amendment and the entire concept of private property. Stalin showed us how the Soviets used that tool, and it's hard to imagine Garland hasn't learned that lesson and will be even worse. We've read the book, folks. We know where it's headed. May Yahuwah bless you and yours.